Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of whose program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener-supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal. I want to begin by mentioning that my blog, jamesfetzer.org, has been taken by order of the court to satisfy a financial judgment arising from the lawsuit brought against me in the name of Leonard Posner, where I've insisted from the beginning that Leonard Posner is a legal fiction and that his real name is Reuben Wabner, and that his son Noah was likewise a legal fiction, and that photographs of Noah were created by photographs of his actual son Michael Wabner when he was a child. The judgments against me when I sought to expose the imposter included a $650,000 for contempt of court on top of the $450,000 for the court's finding a defamation, and where the timing, the taking is a matter I've been disputing, because in accordance with Wisconsin law, you can only take financial matters such as money to satisfy a financial or monetary judgment in the blog. And he also wants to take the book, Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, has no financial value to Leonard Posner, whoever he may be. But nevertheless, the judge allowed them to proceed. I will be in court on Wednesday, and I've invited Holly Seeliger to guest host for me that day. Holly's just terrific. I think you'll really enjoy while I'm in court. And then Friday, I'll give you an update on what's taken place. But this has necessitated my creating a new blog at jameshfetzer.org. So just add the H. No longer jamesfetzer.org, which has been used now to point to PosnerVFetzer.com, which is the legal documents in this case. So if you want to see the latest filings, you can go there and you can actually download them to your computer. And you'll see both my reply to their opposition to my motion to stay, which is suggesting all this business about collection ought to be held in abeyance until the Supreme Court rules on my petition, which is before the Supreme Court, where it will be in conference where they make the final cut on the 28th of September, a whole lot of other cases having been filtered out in the meanwhile. And if my case receives a minimum of 4 votes from the justices, it will be heard by the Supreme Court. I will know by the 3rd of October whether or not my case will be heard. There are a whole lot of reasons why I believe my case will be heard, including that it ranks high on the criteria for Supreme Court cases. What is it? It's a case of keen public interest because of my background in relation to Sandy Hook. It turns out I'm a highly controversial figure here. And what this ruling would do in granting the because my petition is to correct the summary judgment procedures in Wisconsin, which are lopsided in favor of the plaintiff, because it gives the judge the right to determine the facts based upon his own subjective opinion, that this is going to be a very appropriate case for them to hear. It's a legally significant case because it has to do with legal procedures that are applicable in Wisconsin, which in my judgment are unjust and improper and affect every member, every resident of Wisconsin, and it's an ongoing problem. It also represents a conflict between the highest courts of different states. I use Texas as a contrast case. Texas has a very appropriate methodology for summary judgment. We take for granted all of the plaintiff's assertions in order to protect their right to trial by jury. Since summary judgment obviates a trial by jury and allows a judge to rule as a matter of law, since there are no disputed facts for the jury to consider and resolve, which would have been impossible in this case, since I was asserting that Sandy Hook had been, the elementary school had been closed by 2008, that there were no students or teachers there, that it had been a 2-day FEMA drill, technically a mass casualty exercise involving children, where I even had the manual for the FEMA drill included as Appendix 8 in the book. Obvious Leonard Posner, who is suing me for defamation, and this is just to describe the lawsuit. I'm not legally allowed to reaffirm what I published in the book, but where I was disputing the authenticity of the death certificate, obviously, when the death certificate says that the decedent, to whom he referred as N.B. in his complaint, which I found very peculiar all by itself, had died at Sandy Hook Elementary School on 14 December 2012 of multiple gunshot wounds. And yet the court in this instance denied me the right to present all the evidence that showed that nobody had died at Sandy Hook. And whereas in Texas, there would have been this blatant conflict that it would have necessitated going to the jury to resolve this matter. The judge simply ruled that I couldn't go there. We weren't going to go down that rabbit hole. And believe it or not, the Wisconsin Court of Appeals stood by him, affirming. And you got to understand the key word here is reasonable, because by the Wisconsin summary judgment protocols, the judge is able to exclude evidence if he regards it as unreasonable. The Wisconsin Court of Appeals stated in its denial of my appeal that it was reasonable to believe that, and this is now paraphrasing, I'm not reading literally, but you can find it because it's quoted in my petition, which you can download from the Supreme Court directly to your desktop. That was reasonable to believe that Adam Lanza had gone to the school after killing his mother and shot 20 kids and 6 adults. And it even stated a period of time, but 264 seconds? I mean, it was absurd on its face. How could we know how many seconds were involved? Was someone there to start a stopwatch when he first began shooting? Was someone there who would know when he would stop shooting to end the stopwatch? I mean, it's right there. According to the Wisconsin Court of Appeals, it's reasonable to believe that Adam Lanza took exactly that number of seconds to perform the shooting. I mean, this is absurd beyond belief. And then virtually the next paragraph, they say that it's unreasonable to believe that it was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control and gave a very accurate thumbnail sketch of my position. Now, obviously in Texas, where in order to proceed with a summary judgment, Leonard Posner would have had to agree to my position, which he would be unable to do, obviously. We could hardly be at more opposite stands. But where in Wisconsin, the judge was able to resolve that blatant disagreement in the facts by simply treating my evidence as unreasonable, even when I introduced two forensic document experts in support of my position, the judge merely set them aside as not helpful, not relevant. I mean, what I'm learning about the judicial system is stunning. But the fact of the matter is that I now have this petition before the Supreme Court requesting a reversal, requesting the Supreme Court to make summary judgment protocols uniform throughout all 50 states. And that means, of course, that it satisfies these criteria that are specified by the Supreme Court, in my opinion, pretty much to the max. In other words, it's going to be very difficult, I think, for the Supreme Court to find my case resistible. I think they're going to want it. A retired professor of law has informed me that the abuse of summary judgment is a major judicial problem confronting the United States today. It's an opportunity to clean it up. It's also an opportunity, because I'm a controversial petitioner, to explain that the 7th and the 14th Amendment, where the 17th declares that all citizens of the United States are entitled to due process, guarantee that even controversial petitioners, such as a Sandy Hook skeptic of all things, a Sandy Hook skeptic, someone who doesn't believe it was real, was the Wisconsin Court of Appeal found to be unreasonable. I mean, notice the obvious ramifications for freedom of speech. Indeed, the very taking of my blog, I'm insisting on Wednesday, and in my motion for reconsideration was completely inappropriate. It had improper motivation, that it's not to satisfy the monetary judgment, that it was to preclude the public from having access to the contents of my blog, because it's a vast repository of information about Sandy Hook. And get the timing. I still had my blog on the 27th of July. I'd been informed by Dave Gaheri, who is the publisher of Moonrock Books, that the jamesfetzer.org domain name would be transferred at 5 p.m. on the 28th. Well, I was braced for that, but what happened was it occurred much earlier, closer to 10 or 11 a.m., Why were they so eager when this blog couldn't possibly be a source of money for Leonard Posner, when he's done everything he can to take down everything there is about Sandy Hook? He's even boasted of having removed some 1,500 videos from YouTube, for example, and he's gone after everyone who had any access to Sandy Hook material with a vengeance. Why would they do that? Because the Alex Jones trial was taking place, and they were going to be taking my name in vain. Those of you who may have watched will see where to the best of my knowledge, this was the first instance, but it's occurred repeatedly since. They had a producer on for Alex Jones, who seemed to me to be pretty incompetent. And his attorney was reading for 3x5 cards and asked, who is James Fetzer? And she said, oh, a professor at the University of Minnesota, she thought. And what did he have to do with Sandia? Well, he wrote a book about it. What was the name of the book? Nobody Died at Sandy Hook. Well, right there, you know, that's pretty damn interesting all by itself for the public to learn there's a book, Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, by a professor from the University of Minnesota. And even if they got me authoring it instead of editing it, as you all know very, very well, I brought together 13 experts, including 6 PhDs, where we established the school had been closed by 2008, that there were no students or teachers there, and it had been a two-day FEMA drill. You know all that. But they didn't mention any of that. 13 contributors, school closed, no students there, FEMA drill, no. Instead, she would be asked about an email that Paul Joseph Watson, who I thought was a pretty smart guy, he was a UK correspondent for InfoWars, had sent to Alex Jones. It asked her to read a certain portion of the communication, and it said, we got, and again, I may not have the words exactly right, but this was the gist. We have to stay as far away as we can from that batshit crazy Fetzer. Well, what's this batshit crazy guy who's a professor at the University of Minnesota who has a book, Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, got to say? They had to preclude anyone going to my blog because they'd find how fantastic it was to be making such an allegation that there was nothing batshit crazy about what I'd done. So to preclude access to that vast repository of information about Sandy Hook, they took the blog. I mean, this is just outrageous. So it's already in my motions for reconsideration, my replies to their opposition to my motions for stay and motion for reconsideration. The motion to stay, let's wait on all these collection efforts until the Supreme Court rules, because I requested the Supreme Court to reverse this. And reversing it, it's going to mean that I no longer have the judgments or the, you know, they no longer have a claim to the blog. But it's a clear now infringement of my First Amendment right as well, the freedom of speech and freedom of the press. And it's all very blatant. The motivation here is really clear, crystal clear, about as clear as it could be. So I just want you to have an update on what's going on here. I believe, while the Posner team is arguing that there's a zero prospect that my case will go before the Supreme Court, I think the situation is the opposite, and it's a whole lot closer to 100%. I mean, it satisfies all the criteria, another of which is correcting an error. There was a manifest error in this case procedurally by not giving the plaintiff, me in this case, the right to a jury trial in the face of disputed facts. So on all four of these criteria, public interest, legal significance, dispute between the highest courts of different states, error correcting, it seems to me the Supreme Court is going to find this a really desirable case. And in fact, the argument that has been given by the Posner team is that this Seventh Amendment is not guaranteed. It only applies to federal cases and not to state cases, where I point out that Americans are dual citizens in the sense that they are both citizens of their various states, but they're also citizens of the United States, and they therefore are entitled to all the rights and privileges of citizens of the United States enumerated in the Constitution. I also point out that their argument may be, that may be the strongest argument they want to make, but it's of no merit either, no better than the other arguments they make, which is that, in fact, this has really been an issue before the Supreme Court. I found some wonderful cases that address it. Even the author of the 14th Amendment have stated explicitly that it was intended to incorporate the first eight of the Ten Amendments for the states. So I don't think they have a leg to stand on. Now, I'm not predicting the outcome. I'll let you know on Friday. But I will be on court on Wednesday. And I'll bring you up to date. Meanwhile, I just happened to trip across a piece, a review of a book I co-authored back in 2004 with a Native American scholar by the name of Dan Foreros Jacobs, entitled American Assassination, The Strange Death of Senator Paul Wellstone. Now, as most of you know, I'm a retired professor of philosophy, and the last 19 years of my 35-year career was spent on the Duluth campus of the University of Minnesota. Well, I retired in June of 2006 and moved now to Wisconsin, where I reside just 10 miles south of Madison. But at the time, I was actually being interviewed by an alternative journalist in my office on the campus when the Wellstone plane went down. It was alleged to be a crash. They claimed it was bad weather. They were questioning the pilots. The reporter I was interviewing, he said, "We'll find out with the black box." And I said to him, "There won't be any." Even though it turned out this was an Air King A-100, like the Rolls Royce of small aircraft. Paul Wellstone was very uneasy about flying. He had his preferred pilot who was very experienced. He even had a co-pilot. His wife, his daughter, and three aides were aboard the plane. I began investigating. This was no accident, and I did a huge amount of research. I was publishing article after article in an alternative news outlet called Reader Weekly in Madison, in Duluth. I would publish 10 articles. I'd turn them into a book. The book with four arrows, with editing, and four arrows made some brilliant additions, which led me to post him as first author. Just sensational stuff. We discovered that what ought to have been a routine flight was actually anything but, that the plane was drawn off course by the manipulation of the GPS. No one heretofore had ever believed that GPS could be manipulated. I'd been very puzzled by why the plane was coming in 2 miles south of the airport heading west, when I heard from a pilot who'd been flying that day and landed at virtually the same time the Wellstone plane was due at the Eveleth, Virginia airport. He'd been flying east. And when he came out of clouds, he discovered he was 2 miles south of where he ought to have been. They were both using GPS. So the GPS can be manipulated. It was manipulated in this instance, and obviously anything that's actual is possible. So those who thought it couldn't be were simply wrong. It can be, and it was done in this case, to bring them into an area where they created an electromagnetic field that would pop all the computerized components on the Wellstone plane. Now, that included the stall warning device, it included communication, it included what you need to fly a plane, it even popped the solenoids on the props and put them at below idle. That meant the plane was reduced to its glide ratio, which was something like 1 to 100, and as for every unit of vertical drop would go 100 units of horizontal motion. It may have been higher. This is something you can look up online. I mean, this is not secret information. And by my account, the pilots did their very best to try to find a place by simply gliding the plane where they might possibly survive. They found a softly wooded area. Now, as they came in, the trees broke off the wings and the tail snapped off. And what's interesting about that is the wings are where the fuel is stored. And yet the plane, the fuselage, burned intensely for 7 hours. They couldn't put it out. They reduced the plane to ash. If you go to my JamesHFetzer.org. And please do share that if you have any friends who care about my blog. It's JamesHFetzer.org. And you can see photographs of the fuselage of a plane and how thoroughly it was reduced to charcoal. Now, I believe that it was primed for that, that they may have coated the inside of the plane with, some kind of nanothermite, magnesium, manganese, something that would burn intensely because they were unable to put out the fire. And this was an essential element of the cover-up, because if they'd been able to recover, for example, any of those computerized components, they would have seen that they'd been blown by an electromagnetic field, and that would, you know, obviously demolish the NTSB official finding. Well, Wolf Blitzer was even reporting how they closed, you know, there was terrible weather and wind and freezing rain and blah, 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 and they closed the airport. That tells you all you need to know. Well, they closed an airport routinely after a crash to make sure the airport, something about the facilities didn't contribute to the crash. So Wolf Blitzer was playing his role as a CIA propagandist. He, Anderson Cooper, many others in the media are well known for their ties to the agency. So that's no surprise. But the fact is, we had a superintendent of schools retired who heard what he thought was a series of shots being fired at the plane, six or seven, as I recall. But what he was actually hearing was those computerized components popping. In the aftermath of the publication of the book, which was very well received, and what you have here is a review by Bradley Ayers, who is a former Army officer who was assigned to a special operation of the CIA down in Florida with gun running and all this anti-Castro operations that we were conducting covertly. He wrote a very fine review, but I've also linked to an article I did with John P. Costello entitled The NTSB Failed Wellstone, which Robert Murdoch published on his From the Wilderness blog, which lays it all out and further confirms what I'm reporting here. Check it out. Check it out. James H. Fetzer ought to be right back after this break.
Take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey everyone, it's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of a library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out "And Nobody Died in Boston Either." Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Revolution Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, there have been several late developments just coming in today I want to share with you. For example, Senator Chuck Grassley reports the Senate will investigate the FBI Trump raid if the GOP takes a majority. Another reason the Democrats are going to do everything they can to prevent that from happening. Senator Grassley said he intends to investigate the raid of former President Trump Mar-a-Lago resort if Republicans take back the Senate. He said that with Trump, the FBI over a long period of time is kind of a double standard. You know, you can go back to the Steele dossier, and it just seems to me like there's political bias in the FBI. He told Breitbart, "Then I have recently, you've heard me give evidence of political bias of starting a Trump investigation and then quitting a Hunter Biden investigation. So it's legitimate to raise a question about the extent to which there's still a political bias in what we're doing now." He then took issue with Attorney General Garland's comments on transparency. He should make sure that the affidavits follow up on the warrant. So far, the Department of Justice has not released the affidavit that would explain why the FBI needed to obtain a warrant to search Trump's property. Garland and the FBI remained mostly silent on the raid, with Garland issuing a brief statement during a news conference on August 11th. I think that makes perfectly good sense if, in fact, they came up dry. In other words, listen, this has received so much heat, this has galvanized the public and outrage against the FBI. that I believe if the FBI had anything going for it, that it would, you know, have leaked it out, dribbled it out, say they've really got something serious on Trump. I'm inviting my dear friend Rolf, who's now done with all the primaries, to come on and talk about some of the political ramifications on Friday. And I think you're going to enjoy what he has to say. But get this. From the Babylon Bee, and we all know it's a satirical website, but, you know, satire, to be successful, must be rooted in truth. So here's a Babylon Bee opinion. Concerns about FBI raids have been overblown, and there's no need to hang on. There's a knock at the door. Babylon Bee headquarters. We here at the Babylon Bee have been deeply saddened over the past days to see such mean-spirited criticism of our favorite institution of American government, the dearly beloved Federal Bureau of Investigation. While seen agents storm the home of President Trump may give some cause for concern, we feel that the FBI has earned our trust. When they gave up figuring out a motive for the Vegas shooter, the FBI was honest about it. When they were too busy to help gymnasts being sexually assaulted, they were honest about it and hung up the phone. When the anniversary of January 6th came around, who was there at the Capitol to show their support? The FBI. These are patriots who deserve our trust. In uncertain times like this, we as a country must come together in support of our bedrock institutions. We are facing unparalleled threats to our democracy. Who but the FBI will stand guard against a domestic terrorist who asks their local school board to stop segregation? How will America continue if we do not arrest those who build Lego models of the Capitol? Now is not the time for talking about the well-documented cases of the FBI encouraging young men to commit mass shootings. No, friends. Now is the time for putting our absolute faith in the organization who so wisely protected Epstein's clients, who labored for years to prove Russia collusion before discovering the Steele dossier was a hoax, and who we are sure will finally act on the evidence of Hunter Biden's felonies any day now. So take a deep breath, America. The furor over a measly FBI raid is beyond silly, when the agency has never once descended into partisan politics. We're here at the Babylon Bee, so believe it. Wait a minute, good reader, there's a knock at the door. We'll be just back. We'll be right back. Love it. Love it. The Babylon Bee is spot on. Absolutely spot on. Here are a couple of other stories that have just come in this morning I want to share. In less than 3 weeks, states can begin destroying their 2020 election evidence. It's time to petition that these records be kept. The 2020 election was one of the worst events in U.S. history. It will be remembered as the day the U.S. Constitution was broken and fraudsters stole our election. In less than 3 weeks, all evidence from that election will be destroyed. And this, by the way, is from the Gateway Pundit, which I highly recommend. The Gateway Pundit is very, very good. The 2020 election was arguably the most damaging event in U.S. history and certainly the most horrific in modern times. The U.S. Constitution was discarded as villainous and power-hungry people planned for and eventually stole the election. Then they worked hard to cover up. It took the Democrats and their senile candidate with a lot of help to steal the election. It never could have been done, however, without the assistance of the corrupt media, corrupt big tech, corrupt Trump haters in the GOP, the corrupt DOJ, and the corrupt FBI. Also, numerous individual and state governments were involved. President Trump tried to stop the steal. but he and his team never had a chance. No honest American knew how corrupt and criminal numerous institutions across the country had become. When some tried to get to the bottom of the crime, they were blocked. In some situation, like with machine data, all the information on the machines was erased. Yet with all the crimes related to the 2020 election, no criminals were charged. Instead, good Americans who protested the election were charged with false crimes. America has been turned upside down. Slowly and now quickly, the time has come when the election will be for the history books. In less than 3 weeks, all information related to the 2020 election can be destroyed forevermore. The law states, every officer of election shall retain and preserve for a period of 22 months from the date of any general, special, or primary election of which candidates for the office of president, vice president, presidential elector, member of the Senate, member of the House of Representatives, or resident commissioner from the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico are voted for, all records and papers which come into his possession relating to any application, registration, payment of poll tax, or other act requisite to voting in such election, except that, when required by law, such records and papers may be delivered to another officer of election, and except that, if a state or the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico designates a custodian to retain and preserve these records and papers at a specific place, then such records and papers may be deposited with such custodian, and the duty to retain and preserve any record or paper so deposited shall devolve upon such custodian. Any officer, election, or custodian who willfully fails to comply with this section shall be fined not more than $1,000 or imprisoned not more than 1 year or both. That's Public Law 86-449, Title 3, Paragraph 301, May 6, 1960, 74, Stat 88. It's shocking that the penalty for stealing a U.S. election is only 1 year max or $1,000, not much of a penalty for pushing an administration into power over the U.S. executive branch. 22 months after the 2020 election will be September 3rd. It's up to Americans to petition their courts to have all the information saved for historical purposes. More and more information is being uncovered every day. The election was stolen because it never should have been certified. More appropriately, they stole the election, which never should have been certified, and now they're going to do all the best they can to cover it up. Really rather fascinating. There's one more. Justice Roberts tried to flip conservative justices on Roe v. Wade. NewsGlobal.com. It was reported last week that before the Supreme Court issued its final decision on the Dobbs case, Chief Justice Don Roberts had tried to reach a compromise with the conservative justices that would uphold the Missouri abortion law while keeping Roe v. Wade in place. But his efforts were scuttled by the leak of Justice Samuel Alito's draft opinion in early May. How great is that? Some pro-abortion activists at the Supreme Court leaked the draft in hope of putting pressure on the court to keep Roe v. Wade in place. And the leak did the exact opposite. You have to admit, that's pretty funny. According to CNN, multiple sources familiar with this situation said Chief Justice Roberts was already trying to persuade Justice Brett Kavanaugh and Justice Amy Coney Barrett to change their position when the draft opinion was leaked. The leak foiled the Chief Justice's efforts and cemented the conservative justice decision to stick with their original vote overturning Roe. CNN sources claim the justices were aware that Alito's draft opinion had been leaked a week before Politico published it on May 2nd. After the opinion was leaked, Roberts issued a scathing statement calling the leak a betrayal of the confidence of the court, intended to undermine the integrity of our operations. But from CNN's report, one can't help but wonder if one reason Roberts was so livid about the leak is that it undermined his ongoing discussions to get his fellow conservative jurists to uphold Roe. While Roberts voted with the other five to uphold the Mississippi law, he joined the liberals on the bench in opposing the majority decision to overturn Roe and the 1992 Casey decision. In his concurring opinion on Dobbs, Roe said overturning Roe and Casey is a serious jolt to the legal system, where precedent is indispensable so the public can know the law. How can you expect it to be able to conform to the law, act in accordance with the law, if you cannot even know what the law is? And of course, we're told ignorance of the law is no excuse. But bear in mind, I mean, that's a bit much to expect. If you have something that's been perfectly legal for, in this case, 50 years, and then is all of a sudden overturned, we have to know what the law is. Standing by precedent, well, you know, and many of you disagree with my belief that Roe was a wise decision because it allows every woman to make her own choice based upon her own personal circumstance, which can vary widely. There are an enormous range of reasons why a woman might not want to bring another child into the world, because they can't afford, because they have too many children already. The circumstances are innumerable. I mean, it was a pregnancy, unintended result of an affair. You know, it's going to bring chaos into the life of the family and the children. I mean, there are innumerable reasons. So in my opinion, Roe is a democratic policy because it allows every woman to make a choice dependent upon her personal circumstances. And that a pro-life position that does not allow a woman to have the legal right to abortion turns women into reproductive slaves. It forces them to carry to term an unwanted fetus, which is, in my opinion, not only morally wrong, grossly morally wrong, but we know from criminological, demographic, sociological studies that unwanted children tend to become juvenile delinquents. They grow up to become criminals. They commit crimes in society, and now George Soros elected DAs are going to turn it into a revolving door, so they're going to pay no penalty for their crimes or commit more crimes, more serious crimes. Outrageous. So it's rather fascinating that this effort, and I do believe they got it right, that it was the effort. And I've been told it was a Sotomayor law clerk who released it in the attempt to inflame opinion against change in the expectation that it would pressure the Supreme Court. But the Supreme Court's going to be no more pressured by popular opinion here than the Supreme Court's going to be pressured by popular opinion about a Sandy Hook petitioner. They're going to handle it on the basis of the law and the facts. And I'm highly confident that there's going to be a reversal, which is why I've submitted my motion for a stay, where, as I observe, you can read about it by going to my old blog, jamesfetcher.org. Puts you right in there. You can read all these docs, and you'll see Wisconsin law as it unfolds before your very eyes, which in this instance I'm submitting to the Supreme Court, has got it all wrong and needs to be set right. Meanwhile, and these two are certainly worth sharing, Trump declassified documents that prove the crimes of the FBI. Biden reclassified them but never told him. Thus, nuclear mega peso tweets. Jack Pabesco. Was Mar-a-Lago raid over FBI Spygate documents? Here's another. Breaking. Trump confirms documents were declassified. Asked when Obama library will be raided. Here's a Trump tweet. Number one, it was all declassified. Number two, they didn't need to seize anything. They could have had it any time they wanted without playing politics and breaking into Mar-a-Lago. It was in secured storage with an additional lock put on as per their request. They could have had it any time they wanted, and that is included long ago. All they had to do is ask. The bigger problem is, what are they going to do with the 33 million pages of documents, many of which are classified, that President Obama took to Chicago? Here's the world according to Barron tweeting. If true, whoever changed it back to classified might need the greatest lawyer in history, because that person or people knew the documents Trump took and that they were declassified when he took them. Here's another. Can information be reclassified? Yes. Information that has not previously been disclosed to the public under proper authority may be classified or reclassified after an agency has received a request for it under the FOIA Presidential Records Act, the Privacy Act of 1974, or the mandatory review provisions of executive order. But my impression is, and this is from Kash Patel, this guy was a legal beagle, and he's very smart. He's reporting the documents were already declassified. Now, think about it. They're already declassified. Let me see if I can play a part of this and if we can pick it up.
So there's a distinction between national security and criminal cases. And in this instance, it seems to be from the public reporting and the Attorney General's conduct that this is going on pursuant to a national security investigation, which takes it out of the criminal division and into the national security division where I used to work. And the receipts that are now becoming publicly available show vague descriptions of things, because the government is likely going to come in and say some of this stuff was classified, but it doesn't seem to be the case when Donald Trump issued sweeping declassification orders on multiple occasions, both as president on multiple times. So that's going to be a distinction that we need to watch for, and it's incumbent upon the government, the DOJ, to tell us what happened.
Okay, so you just touched on something that I want to dig into here with you, which is the declassification process and what your position was at the time and whether or not you were involved, because we know there's a procedure that has to take place. The president can't just, you know, sort of wave over a bunch of boxes and say this is all declassified. Can you take us through the process where these documents were declassified by this president?
Yeah, so the normal process, and I was the deputy, you know, there's multiple occasions, but I think I was serving as deputy director of national intelligence. If we needed to declassify through the normal chain of command for lower level employees, we'd have to go through a rigorous process to do that procedurally. But the president of the United States is and always been the ultimate unilateral classification authority to classify and declassify. If he says something is declassified, that's it. Then it's declassified. He issued a strong statement in October 2020 declassifying all Russiagate and all Hillary Clinton documents, and that's up on, you know, publicly available. And then at the end of his administration in December and January, he felt so much more information needed to be declassified, he declassified whole sets of documents that should have come out. Now, the GSA has since come out, the government third administration, said they mistakenly packed some boxes and moved them to Mar-a-Lago. That's not on the president. That's on the National Archives to sort that material out. They cannot prosecute him for intentionally, even if it was classified, which is highly unlikely, to issue these sweeping orders, like we went through with the Hillary Clinton saga. They'll never meet the burden of intent, because the president didn't pack it up and take it himself. The GSA has said they did it and they made a mistake. And that should have been really the end of it. It should have been a cordial subpoena where, at most, where they said, okay, we just need this and we'll get the rest back to you. I mean, President Obama and President Clinton still have classified materials in their possession in their home that they have not released to this day per the National Archives.
So are you saying that these particular documents that were at Mar-a-Lago were all declassified in that December-January period of what year?
I'm saying, the end of 2020 and early 2021, before the president left, I'm saying whole sets of documents were. You know, I don't know what was shipped down there, because I wasn't the GSA people moving those documents. Only they do. They packed them. They admitted that they packed them, which is their job, and transported them there and stored them somewhere. So the GSA can provide a lot more clarity to us on how and what was moved, and the GSA could have worked with the Department of Justice. That would have been my move as the national security prosecutor who brought terrorism cases all the time. This is an extreme national security measure taken for what seems to be a wholly unnecessary national security approach.
All right, so you're saying the GSA packed these boxes. They've already admitted that they sent some of them there in error. So then when in June, when they went in with the subpoena and they collected the boxes, apparently then, you know, according to one line of this story, somebody said, no, there's actually more here and you need to come back for what is here because it shouldn't be here. Do you think that is what happened? Do you think, and it, the Secret Service individual was involved in that is one of the storylines that that we're pursuing.
Yeah, I don't know who that individual is, but I think it was clear from President Trump's statements that I believe he put out on Truth Social that he invited whoever was there in June or whatever date we're talking about to the to look and have whatever they want and come back, and I'm paraphrasing, to see whatever they needed. So if that was the case, which it seems to be because the DOJ has not controverted that statement, then they could have come back because there's a voluntary cooperation. I don't know. I don't have any details about that media reporting in terms of that incident.
Yeah.
But again, it seems to be, you know, there's a different way to treat people regarding classified information if your name Hillary Clinton or James Comey versus if your name is Donald Trump. And it's just not the even-handed way to do it. It's not how we used to do it at the Department of Justice.
So do you know if there was interaction between the former president, Trump, and these investigators after that June 3rd when he came in and said, hey, let me know if you need anything, you know, we're here to cooperate? Were there subsequent attempts? Excuse me, you know, Mr. President, we need to get those boxes. Please send them by this date. Were there efforts out there to have these things retrieved in a much more less intrusive manner?
I don't know. I can't speak to that. I wasn't a witness to any of that or part of the, you know, conversation. But, you know, who could clear it up really fast? The Department of Justice, by saying we tried on this date and this date and this date because they're going to have the documentation. They had FBI agents with them. And the GSA would have been there with them because they're responsible for the custodians of the document movement. They have records as well. These aren't classified records. They could put them out. They could put them out overnight if they want. They could put out the underlying information in the form if they wanted. But they're choosing not to. And for the attorney general to come in heavy-handed last night and say, I personally signed off on the warrant, that's not the role of the attorney general to tell the American public that. We know that. The role of the attorney general is to tell us why, in this case, was it so necessary. And they, you know, I can see the point of this whole conversation about nuclear information. Okay, let's just say that's the case. They waited 2 years to go seize this information? Or, and if they get away with the 2 year mark, the warrant was issued on Friday and they executed on Monday, so it was so sensitive they took a weekend off. I, as a national security prosecutor, would get you.
We'll be right back after this break.
Listen to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
That the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope.
We've tried and we've tried for years and years.
to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, we have another story here that is pretty disturbing about the fact that Joe Biden is going to introduce a new bill that basically is going to lead to the exclusion of paper money and introduce all digital, at which point we are no longer in control of our own lives. Because once they get all the money digital, they can cut you off anytime they want. So if you express an opinion they don't like, much less take an action, vote for the wrong candidate, what have you, you can be done for because they'll just cut you off and you'll be high and dry. Here's the report. Biden planning to protect us from cash beginning December 13th. That's just a week after my 82nd birthday on December 6th. Joseph Farrell warns of executive order that establishes Bitcoin's evil cousin. Some of America's smartest men, including Robert Kiyosaki, investment guru and author of the personal finance book Rich Dad, Poor Dad, have some choice words for executive order 14067. It would behoove you to listen to that. Kiyosaki called President Joe Biden's signed executive order the most treasonous act in U.S. history, and the creation of central bank currencies, or CBDC, as communism in its purest form, encouraging Americans to stay awake. He is joined by Jim Rickards, another economist, investor, and former CIA official, calling it a step toward the end of cash, the greenback, in circulation since the founding fathers. The new digital tokens can be turned off if the government doesn't like what you are doing. Rickards has 4 decades of experience on Wall Street. Rickards criticized CBDC and labeled it as Bitcoin's evil cousin. He also exposed the supposed singular event called C-Day, which according to him will take place on December 13, 2022, and will disrupt the traditional financial system of the United States. He added, when what he calls C-Day occurs, paper money will be worthless and the U.S. dollar will crash. He further adds that consumer spending in excess of basic needs will also be restricted and people holding too much money will be penalized. Executive Order 14067, titled Ensuring Responsible Development of Digital Assets, includes developing policy plans in the Organization of Federal Regulators. Any future dollar payment system should be designed in a way that is consistent with the United States priorities and democratic values, including privacy protections, and that ensures the global financial system has appropriate transparency, connectivity, and platform and architecture, interoperability or transferability is appropriate. This is just bullshit for saying they want to simplify the system in the name of what they're going to call energy efficiency so that banks don't have to worry about transactions between other banks. It all, can all be centrally controlled. Yes, yes, more efficient, but also grossly less democratic, completely authoritarian. I mean, this is just grotesque. The International Monetary Fund said in a blog released last month that CBDCs can be a more effective solution compared to credit and debit cards, particularly in terms of energy efficiency. See, they make it, everyone's on a debit card. Really, that's really, I think, going to entail the getting rid of credit. I mean, this is just incredible. The whole society operates on the basis of credit. Depending on the specific details of how they are configured, CBDCs and some kind of crypto assets can be more energy efficient than much of the current payment landscape, including credit and debit cards, the blog reads. Note Rickards, thanks to Section 4 of Biden's Executive Order 14067, calling for urgent research into developing the digital dollar, I believe the U.S. dollar, the standard of the world since 1792, will be replaced by a new currency, the digital dollar. I call the digital dollar Biden bucks because I want him to take full credit for what I consider to be crimes, says Rickards. This is not like the money in your online bank account. No, this is new and different. Every digital dollar will be a programmable token like Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies. But there's a big difference. Cryptocurrencies are decentralized digital currencies. Instead, if it plays out the way I see it, Biden bucks will have the full banking of the U.S. Federal Reserve. They will replace the cash or fiat dollar we have now and will soon be the sole mandatory currency of the United States. Kazaki agrees. But in the climate of fear Biden is creating over the possibility of Donald Trump making a comeback, he has the Fed in his corner. When Biden bucks are rolled out, many experts, myself included, believe they will begin an era of total government control and surveillance. This is not hyperbole. This would dramatically expand the power and influence of the federal government, essentially acting as a new type of spyware. With Biden bucks, the government will be able to force you to comply with its agenda, because if you don't, they could turn off your money. This won't be like freezing a bank account. It will be so much easier. Just think of what this will mean if Biden gets his way or whoever is behind this plot. You want to keep your internal combustion engine car? Your digital dollars suddenly won't pay for gas. You'll be forced to buy an electric. Rickards calls it the tip of the fascist iceberg. America would become a surveillance state like China or North Korea, he says. Is this scare talk? No. It's just Executive Order 14067. Biden signed it in March of 2009, 2022, by the authority vested in me as president by the Constitution and the laws of the United States of America. Look it up. This is about as serious as it gets. Meanwhile, I'm going to make a few more reports, but I'm going to open the lines, open the call-in lines, 540-352-4452, 540-352-4452, where Mitchell is standing by to take your call. Here I'm going to report another story. Joe Manchin says the last spending bill was a mistake and it won't happen again. I used to think this guy had a backbone of steel. I used to think this guy was one of the most important Americans, a real patriot, standing up for the United States. I'm sorry, I no longer believe that. Senator Joe Manchin, a Democrat from West Virginia, explained why he supported a new financing proposal and assured that it wouldn't raise taxes or accelerate inflation, while admitting that he was incorrect about a previous spending bill. The host of Fox News Sunday, Brent Byer, mentioned Manchin had previously appeared on the program and asserted that the American Rescue Plan, a previous Democrat spending initiative, would not result in inflation. Manchin admitted his mistake that Sunday. Byer asked that when he asserts this new legislation won't cause inflation to worsen, why should Americans believe him? Manchin said he'd make sure he doesn't make that mistake again. Too late. Manchin underlined that despite allegations to the contrary from groups like Americans for Tax Reform, who know what they're talking about, Manchin says the new law won't result in higher taxes. Right. Manchin said it does not raise taxes. What it does is close loopholes. Where have we heard that before? Democrat from New York and Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer was difficult to agree with. But Manchin said that when he did, he made sure there were no tax rises whatsoever. Manchin said he had questioned his capacity to do so. The current law, the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022, significantly scales back the Democrats' defeated Build Back Better law. But how can they make that claim when the current law is $433 billion more expensive than the old, which is approximately $3 trillion? In addition to enacting a 15% corporate minimum tax on businesses with sales exceeding $1 billion, the new legislation will close the carried interest loophole, which is anticipated to collect $14 billion together. These two measures are expected to raise $313 billion. The senator argued this is not the same as raising taxes. He asserted it only fills up holes. On Sunday, Manchin discussed another part of the bill, a subsidy for those who earn up to $300,000 a year to purchase an electric car. The provision has come under fire for making the general public responsible for paying for wealthy Americans' expensive automobiles. Manchin had previously criticized the idea, saying there was already a high demand for autos and no need for incentives. Manchin claims that despite current legislation's efforts to promote American manufacturing, he still has the same opinion. A car's battery must be made in the USA rather than in China to qualify for the subsidy. Oh, that's just great, Joe. I mean, give me a break. This guy comes from a coal state, and he's sold them out. Since that's what we are trying to achieve, we shouldn't be seeking for China to assure they have total power over us. We're going to have to break it as quickly as we can because we're incentivizing it. I got to tell you, in my opinion, Joe Manchin had just flushed himself right down the toilet. I am really unbelievably embarrassed by this. Here's an actual billboard. Violent criminals deserve our compassion and respect. This fall, stand strong for progressive values, paid for by Citizens for Sanity. This has got to be a George Soros operation, but how incredible. This is basically saying endorse the revolving justice door because violent criminals deserve compassion and respect. Can you get more lunatic than that? Talk about insanity. And what are the progressive values they're standing for? Anti-democracy, advocating rigged elections, rejecting honest election outcomes, anti-Russia, violently racist, penchant for myth-telling, using false flags to promote unconstitutional political agendas, generalizing gender confusion, extreme belligerency, incapable of rational discussion or acceptance of actual facts, prefer fiction over reality, highly uninformed, extremely susceptible to political lies and propaganda, evades political party, elevates political party above the country, no doubt. They want to keep the Democrats in control no matter what. Blind trust and acceptance of incoherent, demented party officials. I think that's all pretty good. I think that's really quite spot on. Now get this too. While we await your call, should anyone be inclined to call 540-352-4452, the death business is booming in the age of vaccines. The death business is booming in the age of vaccines, unlike when funeral homes and hospitals were empty during the pandemic. Get it? Think about it. The pandemic was fake. There wasn't a surge of deaths. Funeral homes and hospitals were empty during the pandemic. But now, in the age of vaccines, the situation is completely the opposite. The aftermath of destruction and death after being injected with a COVID vax is far more severe than anyone could have predicted. While the fact checkers are hard at work making sure the official narrative gets out, others are sounding the alarm about these shots and what they have done to humanity. Sadly, one segment of the economy is now booming, and that's the death business. North America's leading provider of funeral, cremation, and cemetery services says business is booming ever since the COVID-19 vaccines were introduced under Donald Trump's Operation Warp Speed. Between 2020 and 2021, when Donald, father of the vaccine Trump, paved the way for a quick and highly profitable launch of the injections, Service Corporation International, which handles some 450,000 corpses per year, saw a massive increase in earnings, according to a report from Natural News. Funerals are now a solid but slow-growing business, and the trend toward cremations hasn't helped, writes Alex Berenson on his Substack. But between 2019 and 2021, SEI's earnings per share more than doubled from $1.95 to $4.57. At first, SEI blamed a COVID pull-forward event for the death surge it started seeing. What this means, in essence, is that because people who were already close to death anyway died in large numbers, supposedly due to COVID, the death count in future years would be less, balancing things out. When this did not happen as expected, outsiders like Berenson came to the conclusion that the increased death tolls are not because of COVID, but rather because of the shots that were introduced as a cure. Natural News. Lucky for Service Corporation and its investors, pull forward isn't turning out to be a problem, Berenson writes. Americans are still dying at rates well above normal, even as COVID becomes a minimal part of business this year. COVID, not the vax, COVID's minimal, vax maximal. Here are a couple related articles. Life insurance payouts skyrocket 558% as post-vaccine deaths rapidly accelerate. Another, new data from life insurance companies confirm that Americans are dying in unusually large numbers. I think that COVID cases on a national basis is just not material to our number, CEO Tom Ryan said. So like we tried to point out at Investor Day, I think we're servicing elevated numbers of consumers. The phrase elevated numbers of consumers is bizarre, a bizarre way of saying there are more dead bodies piling up and needing funerals, burials, and cremations than normal. These deaths are flooding SEI with lots and lots of cash and profits, all while the vaccine manufacturers escape liability for death and injury. And the plans for more injections and vaccine continue as the ruling class has tried to convince everyone to be injected for monkeypox and vaccine-derived polio. This entire pandemic was about getting humans mass injected. That has become so obvious at this point that only the most naive can't see what's going on. And here we have a little ditty called "It's Beginning to Look a Lot Like Genocide." Check this out. Here.
It's beginning to look a lot like genocide. Everywhere you go, listen to what they said. Your government wants you dead, with booster jabs that last forevermore. It's beginning to look a lot like genocide, with every jab you take. But the only thing you'll see if you're watching BBC is that the shit's all fake. Boris has said that he'd rather you dead as soon as you possibly can. If you don't comply, he'll give you a fine and drag you away in a van. He'll make sure you won't be spending Christmas with your man. It's beginning to look a lot like genocide in every hospital. But the nurses dance all day while the doctors count their pay, and there's no one there to take your call. It's beginning to look a lot like genocide. They're jabbing kids in school, but if you're out of luck, Big Pharma doesn't give a fuck, and it's all your fault.
They're just showing one person falling over dead after another in political events and sports events all over the world. Hockey players, soccer players, everyone, they're just dropping dead.
By jabbing the shit in your arm, roll up your sleeve and we'll make you believe that the shit will do you no harm. We'll keep making booster shots until you buy the farm. It's beginning to look a lot like genocide. When you turn on TV, they're dropping down like flies, because the government lies. One day we'll see these bastards swinging.
You would have loved it if you could have seen it, and I'll have to see if I can get it up on my blog. Meanwhile, the New York Times is worried that the FBI raid is going to reelect Donald Trump. While Merrick Garland has done nothing to even attempt to reduce skyrocketing violent crime, which is all around us in major cities, he has used his office to declare white supremacy the greatest domestic threat. No one likes corrupt police action, and the bubble dwellers in Washington, D.C. are getting a blowback on their treatment of Trump and his supporters that is sending them scrambling for cover, even while they have a firm grasp on their haughty disdain for the people of the American Republic. Check out this Fox News coverage of 61-year-old David Brooks, who the New York Times calls a conservative writer, to ask yourself what he's trying to conserve. The New York Times columnist David Brooks worried Thursday the FBI's raid of former President Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago home will help his chances of electoral victory in 2024. Brooks further argued Trump's central message is that societal elites are ruining America, and that there's a lot of truth in that. The New York Times columnist David Brooks worried Thursday that the FBI raid of former President Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago home will help his chances of electoral victory in 2024. Why is Donald Trump so powerful, Brooks asks? How did he come to dominate one of the two major parties and get himself elected president? He answered that it's Trump's narratives and powerful stories that ring true to tens of millions of Americans, the main being that America is being ruined by corrupt coastal elites. He argued that the FBI raid of Trump's residence has united the Republican Party. Several weeks ago, about half of the Republican voters were ready to move on from Trump, according to a New York Times Senate colleagues poll. This week, however, the entire party seemed to rally behind him. Brooks' characterization of the GOP and Trump standing in it prior to the raid is not consistent with the vast majority of polls, however, which, according to the current Real Clear Politics average, show Trump having a 27.8% lead over the next potential primary challenger, who, of course, would be Ron DeSantis. Trump-endorsed candidates have also been achieving key wins in primaries across the country, reaffirming his grip on the Republican Party. The Times columnist also expressed concern that the raid would make Republicans more likely to vote in the 2022 midterm election. According to a Trafalgar Group Convention of States Action Survey, 83% of likely Republican voters said the FBI search made them more motivated to vote in the 2022 election, Brooks wrote. He also said he feared the prosecution and imprisonment of Trump during an election would constitute the most likely path to a complete Democratic breakdown. After years of hesitancy to embrace the reality of President Donald J. Trump's massive popularity among the American people, some of Trump's opponents are finally starting to see the writing on the wall that the MAGA king is likely to win the presidency in 2024. What is making the MAGA reality all sink in for even the leftist New York Times is the engulfing feeling that Monday's FBI raid of Trump's Mar-a-Lago estate could have implications for 2024 by making Trump even more of a superstar to the American people and, most importantly, to the voters. The move by the FBI to raid Trump is being seen as highly political by Republicans and independents, and that is likely enough to help Trump win, and even the left sees it now. Why is Donald Trump so powerful, Brooks asks? How did he come to dominate one of the two major parties? They're out to get Trump because Trump is a person who stands up to them. They are not only out to get him, they are out to get you. We'll be right back, and we'll take our caller, Paul from California, after the break.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Ah!
join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it, that the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes, that Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons, and the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Okay, here we have Paul standing by. What do you got for me today, my friend?
What do you want? You want me to say something?
Welcome aboard.
Okay, I guess Trump is okay. How's that? You know, I called because of the sentence that you read. As soon as I heard that sentence, I said, okay, I got to call. The one where you said that, according to some article or survey, I don't know what it was. You said that a large majority or half the people in the Republican Party were thinking of leaving Trump, but now they're all galvanized behind him. What was the source of that?
Let me see. I might have been a Gateway pundit. Let me find it, Paul. Give me one sec here.
Seriously.
That's just yeah, sure. That's okay. This is the Republic. Let me go to my I share the articles with a lot of people, and I'll find it here. Let me see here.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you could find it if you want. It's not that important for you to find it, but there's a point to be made.
Yeah. I'm gonna have it here. Just gonna be ready. Salman Rushdie, David Brooks, World Government, Washington Post. Well, what I can do is put in a sense. Yeah.
So I'm just guessing you have kind of an outline of these things. You have maybe these stories kind of lined up, and you read from them. Again, I'm not sure how you prepare. I would imagine.
Yeah, but I don't always have the original source right here. But go ahead.
Here would be the point of that. Okay, I don't know what it is or how it is they determined this assertion or conclusion. You know, maybe there was some kind of poll or survey, but I don't believe it for a second. I don't think anybody who was going to be, pro-Trump anyway before this happened, is not going to be in some way measurably more pro-Trump. And I don't think anybody that was, for example, thinking about abandoning him for some reason, now all of a sudden turning around and deciding to support him. It's just, I consider it to be a psychological operation. Yeah. But it does make the precise point. The reason that it came to my mind is it's like, yes, psychologically, in some people's minds, maybe even subconsciously, this is what it's designed to do. There's so many things that we see, as you know, that are not just fake, but in many ways are deliberately designed to get us to feel and think a certain way. right? It's not just fear, but it's also manipulation. And they're masters at it. I mean, these people are absolute masters. The two-party system that we have is an absolute disaster for any nation that's controlled by Jews, but it's certainly a disaster for white people.
Get out of here.
There's a... Uh-oh, something's going on.
Keep going, Paul. That was
sorry.
Ryan in Missouri, his dog.
I'm sorry. Yep, my dog was driving me nuts. I'm sorry. I forgot to put it on mute.
Ryan, just stand by. Paul is addressing you. Paul, by the way, Brian, just mute. I find there are just dozens of this David Brooks fears FBI raid. Anyone can go on and find the story we were discussing. I mean, it's all over the place. Go ahead, okay. Paul.
So, you know, and again, it's part and parcel with, for me, the other psychological operations they're conducting on us all the time, such as they're going to hire 87,000 gun-toting IRS agents, and, it's just, I can't even imagine. I mean, they have the people's payroll tax at the source. Okay, so who is it they're going to go after, and how are you going to collect it better with a gun? It makes no sense, but it's all civil, to be honest with you. Right, I mean, they can charge you with willful failure to file or, tax evasion, and that can become a criminal case depending on certain situations. But for the most part, it's all about it's a collection procedure, and IRS is simply a collection agency. So, again, I don't buy it for one second. I don't really believe they're going to hire and arm this many agents. It's just more nonsense that they throw out there.
Okay.
I did want to make. It's just my way of looking at things. But, here's the problem that I have, again, that I mentioned over and over again. If all of this stuff is real, and, of course, you've shown in many ways it's not, with Biden being a fake president and he's got a double. So he's not coming up with any of these ideas and these policies, right? He's barely a cardboard cutout at this point. And, this executive order that he said, look, it's ridiculous. Anybody with two brain cells to rub together knows that executive orders only apply to government employees. Okay, they can only apply to a federal government employee. That's it. They do not have the force and effect of law. I mean, this is just basic, law 101. So, and I'm not saying they're not going to try to do this. Okay, but I think they know. I mean, I really do believe that when they start to close banks. Or start to say, well, we're not going to honor your cash, or we're not going to honor your bank account, we're switching over. That's when the riots are going to begin. I mean, so I don't know how solidified they feel their position is, but it's just, in my opinion, this one absurdity after another in the so-called news, and it's become nothing more than full-time, Jewish scare porn. And I'm tired of it. And this one more thing, 60 seconds will take care of this and we can go to Brian. I'm not going to get into a big back and forth here, but I did want to make a comment on what Bruce was saying the last time I was on and he was on. And he said he found it interesting or he found it curious that I had never commented on 9/11, which is kind of odd because I'm certain that I have, right? But I just wanted to make my position known. I feel that the majority of the 19 hijackers survived the crash. And once they were inside the building, they went to work on the steel beams with their box cutters. That's my
opinion. Very funny, Paul. I'm sure you have commented on 9/11. Well, just hang around. We'll see what Brian has to say. Brian, go ahead, join the conversation with Paul and me.
Well, I've got something I want to talk to Paul about, but first, just so you know, last week in Kansas City, a lot of death here within my family of young 20-year-old males out of the blue dying in their sleep. My son's he's getting married, and her cousin died in the middle of the night, and then my daughter called freaking out. She said her boyfriend died in the middle of the night, and then it dawned on me. I was walking down the street, and there was a car that went right off the road and plowed into a tree, and I said, God, that's odd. So, here at least we're starting to see it. So
yeah,
anyway.
I would not be surprised if this Ann Heck thing, it was a very bizarre accident where she's now reported to be dead, which may or may not be true, was a result of having been vaxxed. I mean, it seems to me we're having all kinds of accidents and oddities that are as a consequence rather than from some independent causation. So I agree completely with all of that. I think you're right on, Brian. We've also been joined by Ken from Michigan. Ken, go ahead, wait in here, and then we'll go back to Paul and go through the list. Your thoughts.
Yes, Trump's using a strategy to divide and conquer. I think he's going to destroy the Democrat Party. We're in trouble, and any of the rhinos or Republicans are going to say, hey, I got to get on the right side of the law here. So Trump's laying down the law, you know. He's got the Midas touch, and we'll see. As far as Ann Heck, was she vaxxed? I don't know. My wife said that she knew something about the child trafficking possibly taken out.
Oh, that would be an independent reason for taking her out. Manipulating your car, you know, it's easy to seize control. They got so many computerized components that it's really rather easy to kill people by automobile accidents that are engineered. Back to Paul, and then we'll go through the list. Paul.
So if that thing was worth looking into, I'm pretty sure you'd find out it was fake. It looks fake to me. I mean, for God's sake, she sits up out of the body bag. There's no burn marks on her. She's supposed to be on fire in that car. I just don't buy it for a second. I think it was some kind of stage.
Okay.
There's a good article on Renegade Tribune. In fact, it mentions one of the commenters on the article mentioned about she's made a film, and then somebody else came back and said, no, there's been several films in Hollywood about so-called child or sex trafficking, and, you know, it's just a film or something. It's not like exposing anybody, and nothing comes of it. So, so that's enough for Ann Hesh. But, yeah, I do agree with you, Ken. We're in the crap, as they say. Okay, we're in the storm, and no matter what, you know, in terms of either Republicans or Democrats, there's just a lot of stuff that needs to be addressed. And you know, if I had any, should I say, influence? Okay, I know what I would do, but we're all just waiting around for the political show, and that's essentially what they've got us trained to do.
Very good, Paul. Brian.
Paul, I wanted to comment. I think you were on a show the other night and you talked about your reading a book. It just tore me up. And you were really into it. And then the guy said, my balls were irradiated from outer space. And then you said, that was the end of that book. You remember that? I've got a story for you, okay? I want your take on this, okay? I was walking my crazy dog that you heard me yelling at the start, and what I do is I bounce a golf ball, and he likes to go chase it and pick it up. And so we're at the end of this church parking lot, and there's a basketball goal there, and there's these little black kids playing basketball, and they'd take the ball and throw it because it was really fun. And I look up, and here's a chemtrail airplane, and it's really low in the sky. It wasn't up high, and it's just got all the fog coming out of it. And suddenly I hear this voice in my head, and it reminded me of in Vietnam when we would have our army radios were Fox Mike FM, and they were cheap and tinny and junky. And if we had the Air Force coming in, the Phantoms, they had UHF radios, and it just sounded, you know, more clear. You could tell the big boys are coming in. And this voice says, we need energy. Can you help? And I go, yes. So suddenly I feel this whoosh out of my heart chakra. All this energy just flowed out of it. And I looked up and I saw this metal crap going around me, the chemtrail. And I said to the little black kid, I said, what's all that metal crap coming off the chemtrail? And he said, that's not metal crap, that's flying saucers. So I looked, and sure enough, there were probably five or six flying saucers swirling around this chemtrail, and they got their energy, and then poof, it disappeared. So there is a story for you that you'll probably put me in the category of the guy that had his balls radiated. So I just wanted to share that.
Well, that was quite interesting. I'd like to see a film of it, but that probably won't be available. The book, if you want to try to look it up, I actually have that book somewhere in boxes of books, which is a fault of mine not having them all out on shelves where I can grab it. But somewhere I have it. The guy's name is John Hall. And if you just put in a new breed of satellite something or other, a new breed of terrorism. So just try, like, put in satellite and then a new breed of terrorism and put John Hall. You'll probably pull the book up. He was on Art Bell. I read the book. It was interesting. But then I came to a couple of, sections. You know how you're reading something and all of a sudden you read a sentence or two and you go, what? What the hell are you talking about? And it's just, this is the way things are sometimes. You could be involved in all kinds of content, and then you come to the proverbial turd in the punch bowl. So that's what it was for me. That's the reason I mentioned that, Brian. But thanks for listening and bringing that up.
Before I go to Ken, I want to bring in Barb from Florida. Barb, go ahead. Join the conversation.
Hi, gentlemen. Hi, Dr. Fetzer.
Glad to have you here.
Thanks. You were talking about people dying. I had two friends, sort of acquaintances, not real close friends, but both of them got the remdesivir and the ventilators and died. And recently, I heard on one of the talk shows I was listening to that there's a Brad Geyer attorney, Brad, G-E-Y-E-R.
Yeah.
And they are doing lawsuits against whomever for the treatment protocols. He said 80% of the deaths are from treatment protocols, and that we need to pierce the veil of the sovereign immunity. But anyway, if anybody's interested, I sent a letter to two of my friends, like survivors, and said, you know, look into this with Brad Geyer. And it's Brad at former, because he was a former Fed, former Feds group, F as in Frank, E, D as in dog, S as in Sam group.com. Brad at former Feds group.com.
So, Barb, I have a question and a comment for you. So, yeah, thank you for that. Yeah, this is just one of the many, shall we say, ingrained policy tragedies that's occurring, and it's in medicine where they can't do certain things if it doesn't meet the standard of care or what you call protocol. So, Barb, are you aware of the work by Brian Artis and others exposing remdesivir for what it was and what it is?
I think I did hear about that, yeah. I had COVID, then I went into pneumonia. And this was all because my primary care said, take zinc, take vitamin C. If you can't breathe, go to the hospital. I wasn't going to go anywhere near a hospital. And I went to an urgent care, Dr. G's, over here in Lake Worth, and they gave me doxycycline. They gave me shots 5 days in a row. And, I got better. I still have spots on my lungs. I don't know what that's all about, but, I'm a lot better.
Right. Right. Well,
Ken,
I'm glad to hear you're better.
Let me bring back in Ken. Ken, go ahead. Join the conversation.
Yeah, I only knew one person that passed away from a stroke. She was about 70 years old, and she was from Japan. And the Japanese were very compliant on taking the vaccine, so she's the only one I know that passed away. All my friends back east are vaccinated, and they haven't had any side effects or any issues that I knew with over the past year now. My mother was 90 years old, but she passed away, and she took the two vaccines, and I thought it was ridiculous. I warned against her taking it. So, but she's glad that Biden's president. She was glad.
Right. So just right. Quickly, this brings up the point, though. So the reason I mentioned remdesivir, just not to get overly technical, but it's pretty straightforward. They knew going in, okay, the research, so-called research was done. By the way, it's an Israeli company. Okay, do you need to say anything more that's behind it?
Geez.
They know that it's a poison. They know that it shuts down your kidney function. And when the kidney function gets shut down or compromised, you start to build up fluid.
Right.
So you basically have the symptoms of not being able to breathe properly and or suffocation. And that's what's killing a lot of these people. And then they put them on the ventilator, and they know. I mean, just the physical act of having that tube down in you, they got to give you these paralytic agents and other drugs, and it's just horrific. So this is all deliberately by design. The whole system will have to be completely smashed. These lawsuits, I'm sorry to say, I don't believe they're going to go anywhere because the system, so-called, is just far too powerful. And so I just go back to, who is it going to smash it? Is Trump going to smash this system and crush it? No. And that's what needs to occur. It's sad. All these people are volunteering. Nobody's forcibly injecting these people. They're all volunteering, and it just makes me very sad and angry.
Sure. Brian, you want to add?
Well, not on that. You were talking about 9/11 earlier, and I just wanted to give my experience with that. As my brother is a pilot for a major airline, he just retired recently rather than take the shot. And he was in the Air Force as an instructor pilot, and he had to instruct pilots from all over the world. He was at Williams Air Force Base, including Israelis. And 2 weeks before 9/11, he got a call from two Israeli pilot friends that he instructed, and they said, whatever you do in 2 weeks, do not go to New York City. And that was actually my awakening, because I thought, there's something going on here. And then a friend of mine went to the casino here in Kansas City, and he was sitting at a table with the guy who was at the Pentagon at 9/11. And everyone at the table was saying, boy, that must have been terrible when you were there and that plane hit. And he said, that was no plane. We were hit by a cruise missile. So those were primary sources before the spin got it. So I tend to agree with that over what I would get from the mainstream press. So that's just what I wanted to say about that.
Ken.
Remember that guy from Arizona? He was in a car accident. He was taken into the hospital, and then he was hooked up to, you know, life support system or you know, intravenous somehow. He was able to get out of the coma.
Yes.
He pulled all the, he got out of there.
Yes.
You know, so something like, he had to go because he was taken away in an ambulance,
Right, exactly. That was a great story. And also, by the way, there was a woman, the nurse that was a traveling nurse out of the Elmhurst Hospital in Brooklyn. And on one of her so-called podcasts or videos, she talked about the fact that the only person she saw come off of those ventilators alive was a drug addict. And he was so, I guess, his tolerance was so high that he wasn't quite knocked out, and he pulled the stuff out himself. She said that every other person never came off of that ventilator. So this is just monstrous. It's the same as everything. It's the same as the media, the political election systems, the financial systems, everything is just completely, Jim, I get some exhausted. I don't know how you talk about it 3 days a week or more. I really don't.
I have a friend and colleague, actually my publisher, who was actually ventilated twice. When the nurses saw him walking when he was up and about, they looked at him like he were a ghost. They just didn't expect it, because as you're observing, virtually everyone put on a ventilator has reached the end of the line. Let's see, Ken, from add a few more words, Ken. We're getting tight.
Yeah, my man Trump, he was instrumental in making sure that that the hospital had plenty of ventilators. Remember that? My man Trump, you want ventilators? We'll get them to you. Yeah. You need to more and more. But anyway, yeah, it's pretty scary. Hospitals are scary. And yeah, that was Dave Gaharri, right? Just spoke with Dave Gaharri. He was a remarkable recovery.
Yeah, he was actually ventilated twice. I mean, he survived twice. I think that's got to be the record here in the USA. I mean, just I was stunned. I was really convinced. I was convinced he was a goner. Paul,
amazing when you think about it. I wonder what the percentages are if they would, you know, tell you for full disclosure. You know, you sign the consent form, or somebody else in your family has to sign the consent form. I wonder if they disclose that. Like, the probability of you coming off this ventilator is like 5%.
It's minuscule. You're absolutely right. Minuscule. Anyone want to make a final observation? Barb, would you like to add? You came in later. Would you like to add?
Yes, Dr. Fetzer. I heard Michael Pillsbury on Lemin's program. It was a previous program. Last night's was even better. But Michael Pillsbury wrote a book, The 100-Year Marathon. And he said that the U.S. has to stop the foreign direct investment in China, because they get our technology and they turn around and use it against us.
The other thing is they're
controlling the cobalt in China. They're controlling those mines where they have abusive children and people working in the mines. And we're going to be beholden to them for these lousy, the batteries. So we're really in a pickle here.
Well, the batteries, cars are exploding. They're turning into fire, you know, and they're destroyed completely. The electric cars are a complete failure. The American people are going to catch up to it, but the Biden admin is going to keep pushing it. I want to thank you all for a wonderful conversation. Paul, Brian, Ken, Barb, very glad to have you here. Most cordial. Back Wednesdays. Talk with you then. Thanks for being here.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here, Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hand of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and the